Hello and welcome to Word Salad Radio presents, quote unquote, guilty. I guess Blockbuster Autopsy. Maybe I don't know. I'm your host Joe Ketchum, and a good day by Ray Gardner. How's it going, Ray?
It's going well. And I forgot to ask you the other day when we decided to do this, which one would it be for?
I'm really on the fence about it.
It's a good one. I don't know. Maybe this is something special.
It's something new.
Something unique, yeah. It's an anomaly, bro.
It's the anomaly of anomalies.
The anomalium, yes.
I don't know, because I rewatched it. We're talking about The Matrix Resurrections. And, like, the first time I watched it, I was really into it. I was, like, for the first, like, two-thirds, I was like, yeah, I like this. This is really cerebral. This is really engaging. It's something new. It's something interesting. Mm-hmm. And the third act really kind of lost me. I was like, I would have done this way differently. And we'll get into that. But the second time watching it, I was like, maybe it's just because I've just watched it. And it's like so fresh. And like, this is kind of a chore the second time around. So I kind of had this experience with the other Matrix sequels, where the first time I watched them, I was like, yeah, they're lots of fun. And then I had a steep dip in enjoying them. I was like, there was things about them I always liked, but it's like it took me a long time to come back around, be like, to really appreciate the Matrix sequels. And so maybe this will have a similar trajectory down the line, where after I watch it from time to time over the years, I'll be like, yeah, this has a lot of merit to it. This is doing a lot of interesting things. But
I guess this is like the one we did for Matrix sequels maybe 5 years ago almost. I
think, yeah, it's been a while. Yeah.
Woo. I've seen it three times now, because I watched it the first night. I actually stayed up till it debuted, it and Hawkeye, last Wednesday, because I was planning to see it in theaters. And then one of my cousins got sick with COVID, and I was like, well, there goes that. I've been managing to avoid it this entire time. So I always intended to go buy a ticket just to support it and then rewatch it on HBO Max later. But last night was the third time I watched it. Although yesterday I was out on the west side. I did swing by a K10. I have this refillable popcorn bucket, and I had to go to Grand Rapids, which is right by 131. The theater is. So I went in there, refilled my popcorn bucket, and got a ticket for Resurrections, and then just left and went to Grand Rapids and did all the rest of my errands. It's like, mission accomplished.
You supported
it. Not like these millionaires need my support, but each time I watched it, I've been okay. I've still been engaged with it.
Yeah, it's definitely really interesting. I see the criticism. I see the problems with it. And I had a fun time, like, imagining what I would do differently, like writing my own Matrix movie while this one was happening. So it's engaging in that way for me. But there's things about it that don't make any sense. And there's things about it that are clearly setting up future installments. Like, Lena Wachowski seems to want to make more Matrix movies if this one does halfway decent. So there's a lot of questions being raised that don't get answered because we're hoping for more installments, I think.
I would like to see more. I was definitely going to come around to that. But the way they ended Revolutions was also similarly vague. You know what I mean? It had all that buildup and then a really, really rushed period of falling action, maybe just two scenes, like after when they realized the machines left and that there was peace. And then the machines take Neo's body away, and then the Oracle speaks with the architect. Boom, the end. And as the end of a trilogy, I get why people would unsatisfied with that. And over the years, I just learned to accept it, because I remember back in all the press junkets in 2003, they were pretty clear that there'd be no more.
And it has kind of the original trilogy has a nice ending to it, where it's like, okay, so the war is over, and anyone who wants to be released from the Matrix is going to be and live in the real world, and they're going to rebuild society. That aspect of Resurrections I really liked, because it's not like there's a bunch of people released from the Matrix. It's like, it's kind of the point of the Matrix is that most people won't be able to be released. Like, most people are kind of addicted to the fantasy world and won't accept that it's not the real world. So they have to stay in, and then so the machines can keep using them for power, but they're gonna keep birthing people into the Matrix. So how does that work? But that's never really addressed.
Well, the guy Shepard, who's General Niobe's like go-to guy, he mentions when he's taking Neo to sort of prison, and we'll, I guess, jump back chronologically in a sec, but he mentions that in this iteration of the Matrix, almost nobody wakes up. And I thought that was maybe a commentary on some of our actual real world or something. But and I think the analyst mentions it too, that people, that more people choose to stay in the fantasy there.
Yeah, he's very proud of the fact that, you know, there's no resistance in his Matrix. Like, everyone's mm-hmm. very happy. They love the Matrix. They love living in this fantasy world that he has built for them. And his production, his output of powers sets records every year.
Like, that was funny to me. That seems like a very yuppie capitalist thing to be proud of.
Yeah, and he's a machine, so that makes sense. It's like he has a goal and he pursues that goal. And so I like Neil Patrick Harris as the analyst.
He's great.
He's a really fun villain because he is so... You can get that he's an artificial intelligence. He's playing it like an artificial intelligence.
Yeah, and he's like the architect. Well, he's not like the architect, but I mean, he's that person, but with the maybe like the empathy and understanding of the Oracle.
Yeah, exactly.
Who is not in this movie.
Which we see in other characters, too. We have like blendings of codes, blendings of characters.
Good point. I did write about that a lot.
So it's almost like he's taken the previous version of the Matrix and taken what works and mashed things up and created this new reality. I kept waiting for it to be revealed that this isn't like the Matrix, because we start with this little mini Matrix, this modal
mm-hmm.
that Neo has built in the Matrix. And I was expecting the larger Matrix to also be a mini Matrix that's pretty much just Neo and Trinity. And they're the only people in this entire Matrix, and everyone else's programs. But that was never revealed, even though I'm still pretty sure that's what happened.
I think they were in the real one. Because there's some real people there, but there's a lot of bots now, which he was proud about using instead of agents. There are agents in there, of course, but not nearly as many.
Yeah, it's kind of like everyone connected to this Matrix is automatically an agent, and they can just like be triggered at any time. So, yeah, it felt like no one in this Matrix was real.
The only reason I think, well, there's a couple reasons, but there's one scene that stood out to me last night when he initiates the lockdown swarm and the people start leaping out of the buildings to try to land on them. That the first lady whose husband dives out, her boyfriend or whatever, she flips all the way out. So I thought to myself, I said, oh, she must be a real person. And he was the bot.
Yeah, it felt like she should have been activated too. It was like,
right. Right, I think that those bots are in there like AI, like like non-player characters. I watched Free Guy a couple weeks ago too, and there's a lot of similarities.
Maybe it's kind of like They Live, or is that the movie with where there's a bunch of aliens posing as humans and the guy with the sunglasses can see them?
Yes.
They Live. It's kind of like They Live, where it's like a lot of the people are these bots, but there's real people and they can't tell the difference.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine there's less real people because they mentioned the scarcity now. I would have liked to have known a bit more about the machine civil war. That was interesting.
Like, that was really cool. The machine on machine war, because, you know, the Matrix has broken down and people have been released and there's a mm-hmm. power shortage. It's like, and I want that movie. Like, why don't we get that movie?
Right. I feel like there is more to tell, or I'd be okay with a TV show, even if it was just like Bugs Crew or something like that, because most of those people, interestingly enough, after I finished it the second time, I finally went back to finish Sense 8 on mm-hmm. Netflix, and I had just watched the 2-hour season 2 premiere a couple months back, and I finally dove back in because I recognized 3 actors from Sense 8, but then as I finished that show, the night before last, and then rewatched Resurrections, there's like 5 or 6 actors from that series in this. And Lana Wachowski wrote it with her 2 collaborators from Sense 8 and Cloud Atlas, the authors David Mitchell and Alexander Herman. The music was done by the people who did the music for Sense 8. And I'm like, holy shit, he's got a little repertoire of of people there when I rewatched it.
Yeah, I only watched a couple of episodes of Sense8. I didn't really get into it. Maybe I didn't give it enough of a chance. But I definitely saw Freema Jimin in there.
Yep.
From Doctor Who.
Yep. And the in that little brainstorming session with her.
Yeah, the little think tank.
The think tank. Perfect. There's an Indian guy who was also, and he was like married to one of the characters, and then the guy Shepard, and three people on Bugs' ship.
I was going to say, one of the ones from Bugs' ship looked like, now that you mentioned Sense8, I was like, I'm pretty sure he was from Sense8, but it's been mm-hmm. years since I've seen any of it.
The guy Seek was also in it.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, damn. And then both ladies on Bugs' ship were in it as minor characters. Like, I totally didn't catch it the first two times. But then when I, you know, since I binge watched it all right after, I was like, hey, wait a second. Now that I've seen Resurrections again last night. So I was writing a lot about that. And these movies, all three of them are super, super technically sound. And Sense8 itself is too. But that's why I went back to rewatch it, because I liked Lana's direction in this. And of course, she was doing it solo this time.
Yeah.
Lily was working on the show with Showtime. And I know I texted it to you. Sent you the clip, but she expressed in a video clip that sort of the genesis of this idea came to her as she dealt with both her parents' deaths.
You did mention that.
And so I really related to it. I connected with it even more once I realized that, because I look at this movie now like the same way I look at Rocky Balboa. Remember we talked about the Rocky movies, and I said Balboa was quietly one of my favorites, because after my grandma died, I got those themes of grief and, you know, trying to pick yourself up and all that. And
yeah,
this is sort of that to The Matrix, because I used to describe Rocky Balboa as the coda to the series, you know, before Creed. And Creed, I guess, is kind of a marker between, you know, starting its own thing and finishing off the Rocky series. So I guess the Creed movies are also codas in some way. The first two.
Yeah. And Rocky Balboa is real solid. And it does play on those themes of, you know, getting older and.
Yes, yes, and
finding
being past your prime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I thought about the scenes where he was going to Adrian's grave, and Creed picked up on those where he kept the little, you know, the folding chair in the tree branches and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I've been to my mom's grave a couple times in St. Louis, and she's buried with my grandma, you know, and it's that kind of thing. The whole movie is about second chances, you know. The ultimate fantasy of being able to see your loved ones again after they're gone. And so I really got that. Even more after I saw that small clip from her, which is rare because she never speaks. You know what I mean? They've been notoriously press shy since the first Matrix documentary. So I got that. But I think that it's so technically well made, even with the differences, you know, like the Yuen Woo-ping stunt team was not involved in this one. In fact, they had, I think, Chad Stahelski, who has directed some of the John Wicks and maybe even co-written them. He's in the movie too as Handsome Chad, you know, Tiffany's husband.
Oh, nice.
and apparently he was Keanu Reeves' stunt double in the old movies. So I'm like, what a glow up for this guy. Yeah. I remember seeing interviews from him, reading interviews around like John Wick 3, where he mentioned a fourth Matrix. He had seen the script and it was, you know, pretty exciting and all that. And I guess that also, I think Lana used a lot of people that she was comfortable working with, maybe who could deliver in a short time frame, especially since, you know, they had to stop filming once COVID broke out and then pick up way, way, way later. So they probably needed a real solid team to pull this all together.
Yeah, because they announced all this was happening pre-COVID, and like this and John Wick 4 were supposed to come out at the exact same time.
Originally. That I didn't know.
Yeah, originally they were supposed to be like both the same opening weekend.
Damn. Well, that would have been great.
Yeah, would have been fun.
Because it was a little jarring to see Thomas Anderson look like John Wick. You know what I mean? I was like, Keanu must have it in his contract now that he does not have to change his look. But then I was comforted when he, you know, woke up in the real world again. Because the first part of the movie, the first time, I think what really kept me engaged was the mystery. Like, how do they pull this off? Because both characters clearly died in the other trilogy. Clearly and brutally.
Yeah.
Because I rewatched the trilogy the night Resurrections dropped. I was like, well, how do they pull this off? At first, I thought it was the afterlife. You know, I saw the trailers and everything, and I said, well, you know, they're both dead. But then in the trailer, there's a glimpse of Neo with the bald head and the all the connection points.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, wait a second. And the trailers were not very good for this movie. I think the marketing was not great for Resurrections.
I mean, kind of like other Matrix movies, there's a lot going on, so it's hard to summarize in a trailer. So, like, for Matrix Reloaded and Revolutions, they really focused on the action.
True.
And, like, yep, it's more Matrix-y, action-y stuff. You get more kung fu. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then they hit you with, like, all this philosophical discussion that people weren't prepared for.
Yep.
And this one feels like even more philosophical discussion, and there's no major like action set pieces in this one. It's more of like a contemplative film about the human condition, and people are not having that.
That's so crazy to me, because I found myself even the very first time being far less engaged in the action. I was exploring those themes along with everybody. Like this movie, and I think Lana said it in that clip too, or in one of the extras that's on HBO Max. Somebody mentioned the fact that this story could only be told with the kind of distance from the others, and I totally get it, because this movie's far less interested in the whiz bang of it all. And another thing, it's less ambitious.
Yeah.
With the second movie and the third one, they were trying to reinvent cinema again. They were trying to top themselves, you know, the Burly Brawl and all this kind of stuff, because Bullet Time was so revolutionary, they thought they had to do it again or do something similar with the 360-degree cameras, although CG wasn't quite where we could accept that without that uncanny valley. But this time around, it didn't have to have any of those ambitions. It was a far simpler movie to me. The story was greatly simplified. I originally did wonder. Another reason I wasn't sure was because they shot it a little bit differently. I guess the color. You know how the old Matrix had that green tint? You know,
yeah.
That had come to be familiar. It's really not in this one at all. And even on the third rewatch here.
No, but it there's feels an awful more lot of like blue. A standard color palette. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And they, I think they did a lot of shooting in San Francisco. A lot of the color blue, though. Which I guess was appropriate, you know, because the Matrix itself was, you know, the analyst was trying to keep Neo under. So he had his blue glasses, Bugs has her blue hair and a lot of blue suits and stuff. And just tons and tons of the color blue this time around.
It was weird to me that the red pill was like a completely different shade of red. Like the blue pill popped, it like looked fantastic. And the red pill was like this burgundy. Give me that bright red pill again, I guess. I don't know. It struck me as odd that the red pill was so muted.
Well, remember, in the universe of the Matrix, the real world actually sucks compared to the Matrix. so maybe it's supposed to be a drab alternative this time.
Yeah, it's just getting worse out there, guys.
Yeah, right. Although there were some improvements. I mean, the clothing was a lot better. I was thinking about the rags that Neo and Trinity had to wear, you know, in the real world.
Yeah, the food is better.
Yep, food is better. The hairstyles and Niobe's aged gracefully.
It's one thing I really liked about the movie is that humanity and the machines have like rebuilt or developed Io as their nation. It's like, oh, Io's from the Animatrix. That's a cool little callback.
And the Animatrix teased that very thing. There was one short where it was directed by Peter Chung, I believe. They captured one of the Sentinels and was trying to turn it virtually to bring it around to their side. And then, of course, Revolutions introduced the concept that the machines themselves had souls and morality and concept. They were aware of the same concepts, even love.
Yeah, they're not karma. Like a hive mind. They all have their unique individual intelligences. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They were alive. In this one, yeah, I mean, that was a great way to drive it forward. The 60-year jump, I think, helped a lot. The technology, you know, they evolved that that digital, I guess that real-world Morpheus, that seems like where that technology would have evolved in that universe.
Yeah, I like that too. Kind of like the programs can come into the real world through this nanotech, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And I like that they work together, you know, like you said. If you noticed, Morpheus calls Bugs in their first scenes together. He calls her a sentient too. And I was wondering, I kind of wrote it in my notes as a, it's not really a joke, but both the humans and the machines seem to go by sentience now. Like they're non-binary, which of course, given what we know about the sisters and the series itself, you know, being a, in some ways.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Kind of a trans allegory. Yeah, I liked that though. And so with the sentience, there is no human or machines. There's just unity there. And I wish we had kind of seen more of those. But I would have liked to have seen more from the machine's perspective. Also interesting too, this movie doesn't contradict anything from The Matrix Online, which we talked about before. I think that stuff is still canon. Morpheus does die in that series, and there were like three factions in that game. I need to go back and read some of those synopses. It wasn't successful enough to keep going, so I think the stories just had to be abandoned, and the entire thing, like there was an event where they crashed it all when they took everything offline. There was a search for Neo's body. This was actually story points in the game that people could alter their DSI to look different and that kind of thing.
Interesting.
I can't remember the details, but that kind of thing was familiar when I saw it in the movie. Kind of struck a chord for, because I used to, not having the game, I used to read those synopses, you know, at least once a month, just to see where the story still went. Like we talked about before, they wanted this whole living, breathing world to exist after the movies. They were a bit too ambitious with the whole expanded universe, but had they been, you know, had that stuff been launched in like 2010 even, we'll say 2012, I mean, people would have been ripe for it now. 2003 was just a shade too soon for what they tried to do. We talked about that before too. And also it is kind of unfair to expect audiences to follow the story into another medium in order to finish it. And that's my favorite thing about, well, I guess the MCU sort of does it, but the medium's still visual. You know what I mean? Like they don't have comic books that explain shit that we haven't seen.
Right, exactly. And The Matrix video games are, I haven't played Matrix Online. I think I saw an ad for a new Matrix thing, Matrix video game they're doing, some sort of online experience. I don't know what it is. But the old PlayStation 2 games are part of the story, or the Enter the Matrix is.
Very much so.
And
it's an integral part to it.
Yeah. It's like you really get this whole other chapter of the universe by playing that game that you don't get from the films, and that's a lot of fun. But you can watch the movies without playing it and still know what's going on.
Right. I always wonder why they didn't cut that stuff into the movies. You know, maybe some expanded edition. Because Enter the Matrix first, I think, introduced Persephone, the Monica Bellucci character, and the second Oracle was introduced there.
Yeah, you're right.
And it ends on a cliffhanger that's, you know, resolved in Revolution. So real clever stuff. But I guess they misjudged the reactions to those sequels. I think The Matrix Online was probably harmed by that. It bombarded people with so much contradictory information and then ended things without much emotional catharsis, and then people were just like, oh, fuck this, I'm done.
It would have been interesting to me if, like, we saw machines going into the Matrix as allies of the humans.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we got to talk to the real world and turn out Bugs was a sentinel, that would have been interesting to me.
Yes, like the actual sentinels that, you know, were flying around trying to kill people?
Yeah, or like a smaller version that lives on the ship and runs the ship, and is like, because none of the captains of the ships are machines. It was like, it feels like if humanity and machines were going to work together, build a society, the machines would be in charge of things and they would like have those responsibilities as well.
Good point. Because there's some idea right down. I kind of, you know, I saw it the first couple times, but it really registered to me this last time that the ship itself is built like the machine. It has a tail on the end of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a little different. Yeah.
Yes. And I was wondering if the ship itself has some sort of AI component to it. I had to assume it did, because I can't see why they were.
Yeah, that would have been really fun too if like the ship had a personality and that we could interact with. Like if Seek was the ship instead of a guy on the ship.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess that would have been a bit derivative. I think Farscape did that, the TV show, and some other show, maybe Andromeda, which I didn't watch, but Kevin Sorbo's in it, who turned out to be a lunatic maggot.
Yeah, he's a bit crazy.
That's completely off my watch list forever now. And they had a living representative. I remember reading about it. The ship had an avatar played by, of course, a hot babe.
Of course. And, you know, other shows have done it. Other sci-fi, like Doctor Who had an episode where the TARDIS became a woman.
In which generation? Because I'm stuck at the first season of Peter Capaldi and just haven't picked it back up because Amazon dropped it.
That was Matt Smith, the Doctor's wife.
I just don't remember it then.
Yeah, it's the first Neil Gaiman episode where the soul of the TARDIS is transferred into the body of a woman on a planet so that it can be taken over by this planet intelligence.
Is that one of the feature-length episodes, or is that just a normal episode?
Normal episode in the, what season would that have been? The Pons are still around, so I think sixth season.
Dude, man, I completely don't remember that, but I haven't
seen
those.
It's a really good one. Yeah, it's a really good episode. The Doctor's Wife, it's called.
Yeah, and so definitely love seeing the machines interacting. And I also thought the Sati character, she lives inside a Kunjaku, doesn't she?
Yeah. So she has a physical presence in the real world and in the Matrix. And I just kind of wanted to see more of that type of dynamic.
And it's a perfect fit for what they've built already. Like, it just makes perfect sense, you know? Mm-hmm. And they go meet her, and it's in this nice, serene place of hers. And she mentioned that she, thanks to Kunjaku, she got out during the purge. And then her parents were purged because their dad leaked the plans for the Anomalium to her.
So she has this sense of vengeance that makes her more humanoid.
Totally. I like the idea that they were taking the Matrix's interpretation of food and then retrofitting, you know, it into DNA to kind of,
yeah, that was interesting.
To create a facsimile, yes. So
yeah, not, when you describe it that way, it makes me wonder if strawberries ever existed or if they were always a part of the Matrix and then they've created them in the real world based on what the Matrix has.
Well, I believe they did exist, but you know, by the time humans fucked up the sky and probably killed all the crops.
Good call, humanity.
The strawberries they are eating are the machine's interpretation of strawberries based on what they learned from us.
Yeah.
So it was like art imitating life, imitating art.
How do the machines know what chicken tastes like? Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, definitely a lot of good ideas and stuff. And this is the first one where I actually really cared more about Neo and Trinity as a couple. I never really felt like, and we might have mentioned this in the other one, I didn't feel like they had, you know, a ton of chemistry or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, because the original Matrix movies, they all have this kind of Shyamalan-esque acting style to them, where it's kind of cold and emotionless.
Mm-hmm.
But this one,
like, except it was warmer in the real world scenes each time.
In the Matrix, they're very, yeah, like emotionless.
And Fishburne mentioned once that he always played Morpheus softer in the real world, like soft eyes and more empathetic. And you really see it in the third movie and stuff, because he's realizing he's probably last time he's going to see Neo and people are about to die.
He's lost his faith in the one, like.
Yes.
And in the prophecy, yeah. But in Resurrections, Keanu Reeves is having a lot of fun with it. He's like, he's laughing and having nervous breakdowns. He's like kung fu fighting at home, watching TV and tripping over himself. It's like, I love when he gets drunk and like decides to jump off the roof.
Yes. That was like a scene to me.
That looks easy. Just fly or fall. Fly or release my mind. It's like,
and he was about to do it.
I think he does do it, but he kind of reboots into the analyst's office. Is that right? Am I getting that right?
Bugs stopped him.
Oh, Bugs stops him at that
point.
Yes,
because he was about to do it for real. He got rebooted when the new Agent Smith shot him, you know, during the shootout at work, which we definitely got to cover him. I liked the actor, Jonathan Groff. I only just saw Hamilton like 2 months ago, 2-3 months ago. I finally watched it on Disney Plus. It was indeed amazing. I thought it was going to be some overhype. I really liked it. And his part in it, King George, was pretty fun.
Yeah, it took me a little while to make the connection that that was the same guy. After thinking about it, I think between my viewings, like, wait a minute, that was King George from Hamilton. I love that guy.
Yeah, he has some of the best parts in Hamilton. I should probably rewatch
for sure.
That soon.
He's a blast in Hamilton.
He is.
The show. He's so fun.
And, you know, I liked his Smith. I do question, and maybe we can come back to it. I do question why he had to be Smith since they didn't get Hugo Weaving. But had Hugo Weaving actually been in this movie, it would have been totally different because the audience awareness would have overpowered every scene they were in.
Yeah, it could have been.
So I do like that part of it.
I think it would have been fun to have Weaving, but play this version of Smith, like where he's having more fun. He's
having way more fun.
Yeah, he's got the cool sunglasses and he's like in on the jokes. Like, yeah, I'm Smith.
Yeah, and he doesn't wake up until Neo does. You know, when he touches that gun and everything, once Neo stops taking his medication. So, I mean, Smith and Neo have pretty much been linked ever since the first movie, you know?
Yeah.
When he broke that code. So, and I do like the fact that the other two movies seemingly explain that part of Neo imprinted on the Smith. And, you know, maybe he's part human now. And that does continue. And Trinity is also part of that now because they basically built this new Matrix using part of Neo's source code. So, in a sense, all three of them, you know, are bonded now, I think, which of course is why Trinity activates powers of the one.
Yeah, why she has the one powers. Yeah, that I didn't question that at all. Like when Trinity starts to fly, it's like, yeah, it makes perfect sense. It's like, no problem with that whatsoever.
All right, and Smith is like the third part of that. I wrote down in the notes, though, this new interpretation cares far less about Neo and Trinity, even about revenge. You know what I mean? He's like, yeah, I'm not really interested. I want the analyst for chaining me up like this.
Yeah, and I like that his vendetta is against the analyst for making him a part of the system. And I like that he's there to show how powerful the analyst is. It's like, oh, Smith is the big bad for the trilogy. And the analyst can just snap his fingers and make him a little lapdog. It's like, that's how right, powerful the analyst is. Yeah.
So that he doesn't even know who he is.
Yeah, exactly. I guess I could kind of see them forming an alliance. I'm not sure what Smith wants from that because he's not doing anything to destroy the analyst and free himself. So I'm not
sure. Well, I think he thought
he did.
I'm
not sure what his end game. Oh, maybe he thinks he will. I don't know why he thinks he could do that.
Well, remember he shot him at the end. And
yeah, he shoots him. He gets shot all the time. Like, why does he think that's going to matter?
Well, no, he dodges, remember?
He what?
The agents dodge all the bullets. They never actually get hit.
Well, I mean, they get hit sometimes because, you know, Trinity blows one away.
Oh, good point.
In the first movie. So they get shot sometimes.
And it's like when he shoots the analyst, you see that code and everything. He pretty much evaporates him. I thought he was dead, but I would have thought that was a little underwhelming. So I'm glad he was alive and well at the, you know, the tag scene.
He's still there. And I had no reason to think he was gone. I didn't understand why he couldn't freeze time anymore. Like, Smith punched him so hard he lost his control of the Matrix.
Very possible.
I felt like there needed to be some sort of MacGuffin to, like, neutralize the analyst. And we needed Smith to play some sort of, like, we almost needed a Matrix heist movie. There needed to be some sort of, like, object that represents a code, that will purge the analyst and, you know, give Neo control of the Matrix. Because I don't really care about Neo and Trinity having bodies in the real world anymore. I was like, I would have been fine with them just being code, like just being this copy of themselves used to make the Matrix productive.
I thought that's what they would have been.
Yeah, I've thought that's, I mean, you know, like you said, it's in the trailer that we see them in the real world in their shaved bodies. But I would like the machines being able to rebuild their bodies and give them life back was a little out there for me. I could have gotten on board maybe with a clone. They could have cloned them.
I think
and
essentially
linked them back
that's
to their
what they
code.
Are.
No, they like rebuild them. Like they have
well,
little spider
that's what
robots
I mean.
Rebuilding.
Like they're
their
not
brains.
Quite. Well, it's like you remember the last episode of WandaVision when the two Visions have that excellent conversation about the ship of Theseus. I think that's what Neo and Trinity are in this case. They've been essentially rebuilt from the ground up by machines, even though it's their same bodies.
Yeah, I didn't get the sense it was ground up. It's like their bodies and they like put their eyes back in and, you know, took the rebar out of Trinity and
the
plugged them
rebars.
Into the Matrix. Yeah, all the rebar.
Right. I just think
the
that
machines,
the
machines have that capability to do that. It's like, that's wild.
Yeah, I think that they kind of did it maybe from cellular level because there's a couple jump cuts there where they show like the exposed brains. And of course, like you said, they gave Neo his eyes back. That took a lot of work. I think they had to build them based on their original DNA profiles or something.
Right, but it would just be easier to clone them. Just like
inject their
DNA into a birthing pod and grow a new Neo and Trinity and put them in the Anomalium and link them to their code that's copied in the Matrix or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And there you go. There's your super Matrix that generates all this power because these two are close but can never be together.
I tell you something else too that was that I noticed. When they got on the train to Tokyo, I definitely wrote down, and I noticed it the first time too, that was the first time they referenced any other cities. The city in the Matrix trilogy has no name. I think the producers just call it Mega City. You know,
yeah,
like,
you're right.
When you see it from the code. But they were clearly in San Francisco this time, which is where, you know, Hotshot Developer would have been. And then they jump over to Tokyo. So this new version of the Matrix is probably just one more reason why people so willingly accept it because it's
more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but the people in the Matrix have no knowledge of the outside world, so they don't have to call Tokyo Tokyo. It could be anything.
That's true.
And they would still accept it. It's like, yeah, it's San Frokio. Yeah, I
like,
get it.
like the strawberry. The Tokyo's whatever we say it is.
Yeah, exactly. This is the movie I was writing in my head as I was watching the final act. I was like, I would have had them trying to find their bodies, and then that's part of the disappointment that their bodies are really gone and they only exist in the Matrix, but then they achieve control of the Matrix and they can run it their own way. And it's no longer a prison, but they're helping their machine allies. They're generating power. They're helping the people who are in, I don't know. There's plenty of things they can do as like the shepherds of the Matrix, the keepers of the Matrix. But I guess with this movie, I don't know where we go from here. It's like, okay, they can,
it might still be a version of it.
They can change the Matrix, but like, who cares? Like, what's the point of that?
No, I think you're onto something. I think that that's probably where it would go. You know, of course they would go and wake more people up. But like Bugs said, this alliance redefined the concept of sides. So I think there would be some sort of coexisting there within the Matrix. And you know, they'd remake what they saw fit. Probably just undo a lot of the analyst screwball antics and stuff. I like that they mentioned the machine overlords are the suits this time around.
Yeah, the suits.
Very
yeah.
corporate. And the suits tried to reboot, you know, activate the failsafe and kickstart everything back to the previous version of the Matrix. But once Neo and Trinity were gone, they just had to sort of leave it there and leave the analyst alive, too.
It was kind of a Good Place vibe at that point. It was like the higher ups are just going to wipe this all away and we're going to go back to a traditional hell.
Yeah. And I did find myself wanting more. I was okay with how it ended, but I could easily see some sort of limited series or some sort of HBO Max thing. Like I said earlier, you could even do it without Neo and Trinity at this point. Because
oh, totally. Yeah, you did not need to bring back Neo or Trinity. You could do a completely rebooted Matrix with a new The One code in there. Or, you know, just ignore the whole idea of The One because The One was established to be part of the control anyway. So now that the war is over and the machines are working together, why we don't need a one anymore. There's something, we need something new to like strive for to build this society together using the Matrix and the real world so that mm-hmm. everyone can survive. There's something there to do. The other major thing I would have changed is I would have made Trinity Smith. It's like you talk about how like their codes are all intertwined. So Smith has to be in the mix. So to have Trinity like activate as the new Smith and we have like she's kind of the villain until he can save her. Mm. That's a movie to me.
That would have been pretty good.
Because I just want an epic Neo Trinity fight. Like, I think that would fucking rule.
Yeah, we didn't get that in any of them because he always sparred with Morpheus.
Yeah, he sparred with Morpheus, and that was such a iconic scene in the first movie and such a okay scene in this movie.
Well, and again, it's because, you know, we've seen too much at this point as the audience.
Yeah.
Movies don't have the ability to wow us. Well, to some degrees. Endgame wowed me. Infinity War, too, to a pretty big degree. Mm-hmm. And even the newest Spider-Man, No Way Home.
Yeah, movies wow me all the time.
But they do it for different... They wow me in different ways now.
Yeah, you know exactly. What I mean? You have to do something new. You can't just retread the Matrix and expect people to respond to it. So I don't need the Morpheus-Neo fight, the lesser Morpheus-Neo fight. I don't need the lesser Neo-Smith fight from the first movie. Like, give me something new. Mm-hmm. Give me Neo punching Trinity in the face. And she's like Scorpion kicks him in the head. I love that. I want that so bad.
I'm going through some of my notes here. I think I did. I mentioned that, yes, Smith seems supremely uninterested in Neo or Trinity. After he saved the day in the simulate, he simply leaves.
Yeah.
Because our alliance is over. And then he has that line, anyone could have been you, whereas I've always been anyone. I want to see more of this Smith because now he really is. What's that phrase? What, a man without a home or a man without a country? That's what he is.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at him. He's what does he want? What is he going to do now?
Because he already tried to end everything, you know.
Yeah, he already took over the Matrix and tried to rip it apart, and that didn't work out. And now he can't seem to copy himself anymore. He just moves within the system.
Mm-hmm.
What does he want? He's always had like very clear wants, and I don't know what this Smith wants.
And maybe he doesn't either.
Yeah, maybe the future of the Matrix is him figuring that out, I guess.
And maybe he becomes even more sentient, you know?
Yeah,
I should say more human.
I assume he would want to be a real boy, I assume, now that this technology
right,
has evolved.
That's where I'm going with it.
Where he can go into the real world, it seems like he would want that. He would want, you know, to get out of this fake world that he hates.
And I think he would do fine with the nanotechnology this time, because when he copied Bane in Reloaded and Revolutions, he loathed being inside of a human body.
Yeah, it was like gross and sticky and it bled. Yeah. It was really fragile. Yeah.
Yeah. And he could feel it rotting.
But it feels like he would want a robotic body in the real world that he could interact with the real world. I don't know. I don't know what he wants or what he should want.
And that's kind of the way Jonathan Groff plays him, too. He's kind of hard to read and way more laid back, like you said. And, you know, like, when he called Neo Tom, I was like, hey, wait a second. He doesn't do that.
Tommy, buddy.
Yeah.
I also like...
Mr. Anderson.
Yeah, exactly. It's also interesting that Morpheus is also part Smith code.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is a complete invention of Neo. It's like Neo coded this version of Morpheus in his little modal version of the Matrix. And he, you know, escapes when Bugs and her crew hack the modal. But
which is also foreshadowing, because Neo is already reshaping the Matrix like he created that modal within the Matrix itself.
Yeah, it's weird though that because Trinity is clearly based on Tiffany in his reality. So why isn't the Trinity in the modal also Carrie Ann Moss?
It's a good question.
And they do point, like Bugs does point out, like this isn't how it's supposed to happen. Maybe so she's not Trinity. I don't know. I guess I don't follow what the point of it, all of that is, other than
cause well, she's based on a memory, you know, and maybe that's something to do with it. She's based on his flawed, limited memory of those events.
Well, he has the Matrix game in his reality with Trinity being Trinity that he has code for that he could copy into the modal. It could be
that's true.
It should
that's
be ident. It feels like she should be identical, except that her purpose is to develop the Morpheus character to maybe test whether his reality is real. I don't know. There's a lot of leaps in logic there that I'm not putting together that I might upon subsequent viewings. But right now, I don't.
Maybe
get
it's there for discovery. For somebody like Bugs to finally come along and see like, hey, this isn't the way shit's supposed to be.
Okay, so it's like
which woke up Morpheus.
A back door. So like
yes.
So if there is a real world out there, they can get into the modal really easily.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. That makes some sense.
Maybe it was his subconscious kind of grasping for self substantiation again, you know?
Yeah.
Like the kid in the Animatrix.
Yeah, exactly. Because the first time I watched it and we moved from the modal into the Matrix and Neo's watching his computer screen and there's a perimeter breach, like, oh, that's clever. Like, he built his own Matrix in the Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fun idea. And then it turns out that he built the Matrix games that we, you know, the previous, his all his memories are now this game in his reality. It's like, a lot of that's really fun to think about.
Have you seen Free Guy with Ryan Reynolds?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, it. I don't know. Seeing these movies so close together, I saw a lot of similarities there. Not necessarily direct similarities, but just the whole idea of, you know, AI sort of waking up and becoming more human and interacting with game players and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Free Guy is a blast. Like, Free Guy is so much fun. It knows what it is. And it's not having, like, the big Matrix philosophical discussions about everything, but it's self-contained. And it doesn't raise questions that has no intention of answering. So I respect Free Guy a lot. This is
it's just know, fun. And Ryan Reynolds makes everything fun.
And this is good and ambitious, and maybe they'll get a chance to finish off, like tell the rest of this story. But I don't know. It always kind of bothers me when they just assume they're going to make something eventually, and each movie should kind of be self-contained.
Yeah, that annoys me greatly for stuff nowadays. Even the Dune adaptation, I'm like, why the fuck would y'all only green light the first half?
Yeah, it's a good thing it did well. It's a good thing
right,
it did well.
That's what I'm saying. What if it didn't? That would have been a terrible place to end anything.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, the Dune novel is intense and it's got a lot in it. But, yeah, you could probably find a better place to end it and it feels more self-contained. Kind of like the first Matrix. Like, it sets it up for sequels. But we don't know if we're going to get sequels. It was like, it ends with Neo realizing who he is and he's like, I'm gonna go and end the Matrix now, and then the sequels deal with, okay, it's not that easy.
Yeah, way not that easy. Sequels just tear apart everything you know about the first movie.
Yeah, because exactly,
if you stop it at the first movie, it's a superhero origin story. Oh, look at that, he can fly at the end, you know.
Yeah. And then the second one is like, you're only a superhero because we wanted you to be one. I was like, oh, fucking shit.
Right. There's nothing special about you whatsoever.
There's nothing special about you, Neo.
except your code will fuck up the entire Matrix if you don't sacrifice yourself.
Yep, exactly. You have to sacrifice yourself because you're human and you have a conscience. And that's all really great. And I don't know. And maybe, like I said, maybe we need the rest of the story to fully understand what's going on here. And given the mixed reactions, I don't know that we're going to see more Matrix stuff.
Well, you know what's interesting? I avoided reviews at first because I didn't want it to color my own experience with it. But the ones I saw were all pretty positive. I didn't see a ton of them, but I just, you know, when I gleaned, I was like, oh, okay.
I haven't read a lot of reviews, but just like looking at the percentages, this is the worst reviewed Matrix movie.
Really?
Yeah. I've seen a bunch of people say at least it was better than Revolutions, because people, I think, unjustly hate Revolutions
very
out of hand.
Very unjustly.
I've always really liked it. And, you know.
Me too.
When you watch it a lot, you appreciate the little subtleties in it more. But yeah, this has the lowest rating of any of the Matrices.
And I appreciate all the, you know, the choices made in Revolutions. Like when I was rewatching it, how they took Neo and Trinity off the movie for about almost 30 minutes. you know, and shit like that, and focusing on the Siege of Zion. That stuff is still good to me.
Yeah, I mean, Revolutions is cool because every character has, like, something to do, and every character has agency and an arc, and it's a big problem I have with Resurrections is, like, there's a bunch of, like, filler crew members that I don't know their names, I don't know what they're doing. One is a big Neo fanboy, and that's about it. One, I don't know, there's you mentioned the couple of girls on the ship, like, I don't know what they do other than are on the ship. It's like, if you think of the original Matrix, all of those crew members had character. Yeah. It was like, you can remember all of them. You can tell us what their deal was, what they wanted. They all played off each other well. And here is like, here's some filler characters. So that's a problem for me.
That's reasonable. Some of them, like that APOC guy, nobody really knew what he was there for. But yeah, I know that Switch APOC character was supposed to be a woman. Oh, I'm sorry, supposed to be a man.
Was supposed to be a man in the real world and a woman in the...
Yeah.
Which would have been a great choice. And I'm surprised they didn't do stuff like that in this one. Like I said, that we didn't get a machine posing as a person in the Matrix. It's like, or like you said, a gender swap. Or when Niobe goes into the Matrix, why doesn't she still imagine herself as a young woman? And I was like, when she's in the Matrix talking to whatever, it feels like she should be her young self.
I hadn't thought of that, but maybe they always said the digital self-image came from somebody's own.
Yeah, it's like their own perception of themselves, but it feels like Niobe feels like she's 30. Like, I feel like Niobe would get in the Matrix and just, like, kick ass.
I also feel like she doesn't go back to the Matrix very often at all. I feel like this might have been her first time going back in ages.
Yeah, she's just, it's not even really the Matrix proper. It's just, like, a little construct program.
Right, that's exactly what she's in. You're right.
Yeah. But even so, it's everyone's in there. Everyone has their Matrix projection image. I felt like her should be young Jada Pinkett Smith.
But you know what? As you get older, you care less about those sorts of things.
That is true. Vanity. So that is true.
She might be at peace, although she seemed a little angry about growing old, but or at the fact that Neo did not at all.
Maybe somewhere in between. Maybe she shaves off a few years. She can move a little better. Because she's still like hobbling around in the Matrix. Like, why are you limping? You shouldn't have to do that.
And I do like the fact that she is far, far more like her old boyfriend, Commander Locke. You know, one of our favorite characters we talked about in the last one. I missed him quite a bit. One of the girls on Bugs' ship, the black girl, who's also in Sense8. I can't think of her name, but I saw it last night. Damn it.
Frank. Yeah, Roland's granddaughter. Remember.
Yes, she's Captain Roland's granddaughter, who was the captain of the ship that Niobe piloted into the docks. So that was interesting, you know, way down the line there. And he never really believed in Neo and those guys, except privately.
Yeah, and it's consistent for Niobe, too. It's like she never believed in the One, and it's kind of formed a rift between her and Morpheus originally. But, you know, she believes in the Oracle, which I find interesting. So the Oracle says, like, she can help Neo or not, and she takes a chance on him. So
yeah, I think she didn't expect even that. I think that might have been what sort of tipped the scales in that favor, you know? It's like, oh, she was right about this, and then, you know, she made her choice.
She's a free thinker. I've always liked Niobe as a character.
Along with those similarities to, like, Commander Locke, I guess she mentioned the PTSD that for a long time after the ceasefire, she kept expecting things to pop off again.
Well, they have this great discussion about how, you know, the Matrix pumps in all this noise and it brainwashes you and it makes you addicted to it and institutionalizes you.
Mm.
But war does the same thing. So Niobe doesn't know how to exist without being a soldier. And that's good for her character, too. It kind of reminds me of Captain America. I was like, that's always Steve Rogers' big thing, is he doesn't know how to be a person. He's only knows how to be a soldier until
Tony sacrifices himself.
The 5 years between, I'd say between the 5 years between Infinity War and Endgame, he's like, oh, war, I can't do that anymore. I can't be that person anymore.
Yeah, that's when he started the support group, the post-traumatic stuff, because it is traumatic.
And that's why he can lift Mjolnir, because he's no longer a warmonger. So I think he could have done that any time after the snap. It broke him. It changed him.
It broke a lot of people.
It did.
Shit, I'm lucky Thor was even... Actually, Thor was surprised he could still lift it. I just thought about it. Yes.
He was surprised. Yeah.
He's totally surprised.
Because the main criteria for the hammer is, you know, you don't want to fight a war? Okay, you can lift the hammer.
Yeah.
That's about it.
That's why Vision lifted it so effortlessly, you know, minutes after birth.
It's got that clean tablet, the whatever you call it.
The clean slate.
The tabula rasa.
Oh, tabula rasa,
yeah. The tabula rasa. Didn't really talk about Jessica Henwick. I like her a lot.
I love her.
And she's really cool in this.
I loved her since she appeared in Game of Thrones, but she was good in Iron Fist. She's probably the best thing in Iron Fist, too.
Yeah, she's real solid in Iron Fist.
I hope they still have a space for her. She said that she was, she turned down a role from, or in Shang-Chi to do Matrix. And part of the reason she mentioned that was that she hoped, well, that if she had taken the role, it would have put Colleen Wing to bed for good. And she wanted to keep hope alive, so to speak.
Oh, like, and they were going to kill her off in Shang-Chi?
Well, no, she wouldn't have been Colleen. She would have been a different, unrelated character, which, you know, was problematic for MCU. I still have issues with it. The fact that Alfred Woodard played a small role in Civil War that was not Mariah Stokes and Luke Cage, but
yep.
Only a little gripe, or the fact that Mahershala Ali, you know, had a big role in Luke Cage and is now going to be Blade. So those things will have to be addressed. But you know, I'll take what I can get. And I'm happy to, you know, have Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio again.
Although,
if we have to work around those others.
I guess I don't want to spoil Hawkeye. Yes, Vincent D'Onofrio, Kingpin, is in Hawkeye. But I will spoil nothing else about it.
Well, and by the time this drops, I mean, people will.
Yeah.
It'll be past the spoiler threshold. So
It's got to be, right? It's like, you either have seen it or you won't see it.
Right. Most of us go the first day.
But he's in there.
Like it was Spider-Man. Yeah.
It's cool to see Kingpin show back up.
Very cool. I was so excited. That's why I stayed up for the finale. That's why I stayed up that night. That plus Matrix, I couldn't go to sleep. It's like a kid. It was like, that was like peak nerd week right there. And Spider-Man dropped the next day.
Oh man, I had so much fun with Spider-Man.
They had a lot of good quotes. I liked the analyst told Neo, the world doesn't end when you do.
Yeah.
Because when we're younger, you know, we think the world revolves around us. And as you get older, you get moved way further and further into the periphery, you know, as the younger generations take center stage. I'm feeling a bit of that now. Certain things in music and certain TV shows, things like Dragon Ball, Naruto, Pokemon, those were all just below my threshold. So I missed like all of that. But those are formative for my younger cousins and stuff. So I was like, oh, well, that's because I'm not the target demographic anymore. You know,
yeah,
I think
18 point.
To 34 feels, was the big thing.
This feels like a Gen Z Matrix movie.
Mm-hmm. It does. And I think that there was a lot of those themes in there. You know, he couldn't fly anymore. He wasn't in any particular good shape. His kung fu was rusty. Oh, you know, he was he used more telekinesis than anything.
Oh, man. That's, I think, maybe my biggest problem with the whole climax is it never felt like they were in danger, because Neo could just like do a telekinetic blast and nothing mattered. I don't know.
To clear the path.
Yeah, it's like the two helicopters are firing at him. He's just stopping the bullets, and then he deflects a missile at the other helicopter. Like, okay, nothing seems challenging for this Neo.
Well, I think that I might have also been okay if they leapt to their deaths. That is an ending that, you know, maybe is too midlife crisis. that's probably way too dark for the franchise. But I would be okay
if like they couldn't find their bodies. And they came to believe they only existed in the Matrix, and they leapt to their death, and they wake up in the real world. They like, that's how they kind of jar themselves out of the Matrix. It's like,
that's what the kid did.
That could be an interesting way to go. Yeah, that's what the kid does in the Animatrix. It's like, there's so much, I see so much potential in it. That's the thing. It's like, I see what they could have done, and it felt like they were pulling their punches. It felt like they were trying to play it safe. There's a lot of commentary. There's like lines about how
a lot of that.
There's lines about how the parent company is going to make more Matrix games without us. Like, is that why we have a new Matrix movie? Because Warner Brothers was going to make one anyway?
Do you remember? I might have texted you that link when they mentioned it. This is probably in 2017. They announced it, 16 or 17, that they were going to develop a new Matrix, and it would have most likely been a reboot without the Wachowskis.
Yes.
Yeah, that was definitely everything they mentioned about those games and stuff was all meta.
Because there was discussion of like Michael B. Jordan being Morpheus's son. Or something like that, or rebooted version of Morpheus, something like that. I remember that happening. So when the Warner Brothers started talking about that, Lana Wachowski stepped in and was like, "I'll make a new Matrix movie just so you don't fuck it all up."
right. I think that's what happened.
So there's a little bit of like ambivalence. There's a little bit of scorn in those lines about like, if we don't make a Matrix game, they're gonna ruin it.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Well, you know, the studio lets her do what she wants. Yeah, it was a little pointed. The criticism, but I thought it was amusing to me, all that discussion, even when the think tank is talking about what actually was the Matrix. So it's a trans allegory, or what were some of the other ones they said?
I was like, it's a warning against capitalism. That was one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, other people were just like, no, it's all about mindless action and bullet time.
Yeah, yeah. And there was some commentary is that that's what people wanted, which is true. I remember David Chase, the creator of The Sopranos, had the same sort of love-hate relationship with his audience. He was making a nice cerebral, thoughtful drama that explored, you know, the inner workings of a sociopath. And the audience, to a large degree, wanted more whackings, more Goodfellas and Casino. And those are great movies. But yeah. In that kind of long form storytelling, you don't have to throw thrills out every minute. And that's kind of how I felt with this movie. I didn't. I was, like I said, way more engaged in the questions and the answers and the longing. The movie is really, it has this theme of longing or pining for something. And I think that that's something that comes along with that grief, too, you know?
Yeah. The action felt more obligatory rather than narrative.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Still well done. You know, you can tell the fighting was, I guess, a little more down and dirty. It wasn't all the kicks and stuff, except for the sparring that they did. Most of it was just, you know, punches. I was about to say fisting. I don't know where that came from.
I wanted to say fisting in this movie.
Yes. Oh. And it's like, you know, it wasn't the draw. I liked that. Still very well made and produced, and a lot of cool visual gags and stuff, like when Morpheus and Bugs step into a doorway that's upside down and they shift, you know, to right side up. That kind of stuff was cool to
me. Yeah, I like that. The like chasing them through the back doors.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, different places they go to have different rules, different physics. Yeah.
And different, it was way simpler, you know, because I was thinking about the other exiles that didn't get to rejoin us, like Seraph and, you know, the Oracle. I wasn't sure if we'd see it all, but I thought maybe we would. But I'm kind of glad they went without it, because then, it, you know, they'd be following a bit more of the formula, which is kind of ironic because the movie definitely follows the formula of the first movie.
I thought we'd get an answer to what happened to her, at least. I was like, yeah, we haven't heard from the Oracle since you disappeared or shortly after that, whatever it was.
Yeah, she mentioned that the Oracle, the last time they heard from her was when she mentioned a new power on the rise, probably the Analyst.
Yeah, so even if it was just like the Analyst said, yeah, I had to wipe her out, I had to purge her.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, then we get something, like she's gone. But it felt like she was around, she was going to be around, she was going to be revealed. But no, nothing.
Yep, I feel like the Analyst is the new version of both the Architect and the Oracle. Actually, that's who I thought I would see. If nothing else, I thought maybe we'd see the Architect. But once I understood that Neil Patrick Harris was who he was, and, you know, and it's like, okay, that all fits. It's a new version of the Matrix, one that was built without the anomalies, but in such a way that it wouldn't be a systemic crash. The error wouldn't escalate until everything breaks down. A lot of callbacks to the first movie, but, you know, they are so knowing that it's almost not even, like, they're not subtle at all. You know what I mean?
It was weird to use so much footage from the original movie. It's like,
yeah,
we could have just made the reference without, like, cutting to the clip from the first movie, like when Smith and Neo first interact. Like, you remember our first meeting, you said it had all the charm of an FBI interrogation. Like, we could have connected the dots on our own without needing to cut to the interrogation scene.
I wonder if some of that was for new audiences. I don't know. But you're right.
Like
I mean,
a studio fans. Note. Yeah.
Yeah, because we would have got it right away, especially if you rewatched them pretty close to...
And new people could have been intrigued enough to go back and watch the original movies if they haven't watched them. It's weird to watch the fourth movie in a series, no matter how much of a reboot it is.
And I guess it was sort of, I think that's why it's structured like a reboot at first, like as a meta commentary on what Warner's wanted to do.
I think I almost would have been fine with a more standard reboot. I was like, you could still bring back Keanu Reeves because all the ones look like Keanu Reeves.
That would have been interesting. I don't know if they ever really addressed it.
Yeah, it's like all the previous iterations just look the identical. But, you know, we got people that's switching faces anyway, so you don't need them.
Right.
It's like you just have people, you know, just switch actors willy-nilly, and it's just okay within the reality of the Matrix. Yeah, this person's played by a different person now.
And to other characters, he did not look like Keanu Reeves, you know?
Yeah, he looked like a little old man. Yeah. Well, do you want to talk about the guilty pleasures of characters in the Matrix : Resurrections?
Yes. Yeah. I never think about these ahead of time. Which is always good.
Me either, but you pick a character for me, and I'll pick a character for you, and we'll see how it goes.
Maybe Niobe. You can go with Niobe.
Oh, I was considering her for you. Interesting. How about you do Handsome Chad?
See, I was wondering about if I should do the bots or not, because they're not real. Yeah,
I mean, they're still an artificial intelligence.
That is true. Well, I mean, since the whole movie's meta, I think Handsome Chad directs huge action movies in his as his guilty pleasure. He builds these entire worlds. John Wick exists as a product of Handsome Chad, the whole John Wick universe, including the spinoff that's coming, the series that's coming.
That's a good one.
He builds all that in his spare time, sort of like Neo built his game within the Matrix.
Yeah, he just has his own, like, sub-Matrix that's the John Wick universe.
Right, right. And that's why Lawrence Fishburne is in there. You know, the original Morpheus is back.
Yeah.
He constructed it all. Because
Thomas Anderson is famous in this world, so he drops him in there as John Wick.
Mm-hmm. And damn, yeah, that's some more mileage to be wrung out of that. Because each John Wick, the universe just expanded so much more in each movie that now it's like a hyper reality. You know what I mean?
It's so big.
And it's divorced from our reality now. Everybody's a trained killer. They're so, you know, adept at what they do. There's this whole hotel people can go to and all that stuff. Yeah. Only a machine could come up with that level of weirdness.
It's machine thinking.
Yeah.
Sounds just like the thinking of a machine to me.
Ah, yes.
Niobe's hard. I feel like her guilty pleasure might be mutiny.
Yeah, maybe so, because she's so wound tight now.
Yeah, she, she was always a bit of a rebel.
Yes.
And now Bugs, she sees like herself in Bugs. It's like, this is a young Niobe. So she's a little bit charmed every time Bugs like blatantly commits mutiny.
And treason and all kinds of shit.
Treason, just nothing. Everything goes.
That's fair. That's fair. And I think that's also why, you know, like as I'm older, I think we talked about this before, how it's hard for me to rewatch The Goonies because I can't stand precociousness.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I refuse to rewatch The Goonies because I'm absolutely convinced it won't hold up from when I was a kid.
I am certain. Like you said, yeah, I don't even want to look at it. I don't even know if I want to show it to kids.
Some people have told me I'm wrong, but I was like, I don't want to risk it because I remember liking The Goonies a lot and I don't want to risk it.
And I remember at the end, I think this is 2021. At the end of 2020, I sat down with my cousin Jasmine, who I watch a lot of stuff with, and I showed her and the kids Gremlins. And she tore that movie a new asshole. And it made me also see it the same way she did. I was like, oh, fuck. I'll never be able to enjoy this again. Because she dismantled it. And I think that I think that the way I feel about the Goonies and the kids in the Goonies is how Niobe feels about Bugs. So fucking precocious and rebellious. I just want to stamp you out and get off my lawn.
These kids today with their strawberries. They don't know nothing about nothing.
They don't know nothing about this gruel we used to have to eat.
It tastes proteins. Like
rust. Yeah. Yeah, I think that is what her guilty pleasure is. It's like she dreams of it, but she has to repress all those urges nowadays. Poor thing.
Poor thing.
And she lost both loves of her life, but I think that she was in a relationship with that botanist. That certainly didn't seem like a friendship to me.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't get that. It wasn't like Leia and Laura Dern had a relationship.
I haven't watched it in a while. Missed that subtext?
Oh, Last Jedi, they totally were in love.
What?
Oh, you got to watch it again. Like, they are into each other.
Oh my God.
I didn't get that at all from this one, but that's interesting.
How did I miss that?
I don't know. It's right there.
Damn, I guess I was just so enamored with the way they dismantled everything else in Star Wars mythos.
Yeah.
I'm just glad they had the balls to do it. And then, of course, the lack of balls to undo it all.
I'm
pretty sure she was in a relationship with him, because once they broke Neo out, I'm with her. I mean, they are together on that balcony and she calls her B, you know, like an affectionate name,
a little pet name. Yeah.
Yeah. And they have the blanket around each other, and that would be, you know, I believe that in that universe, everybody's more fluid.
Sure.
Partly
in
this necessity, and even the machines are, you know what I mean? I think that.
Yeah, they certainly wouldn't have our like archaic concepts of gender identity and sexuality. It's like, yeah, I find you attractive today. Let's go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
probably I could totally machine get into action that. Somewhere in there.
There's definitely robosexuals in this universe.
Robosexual. I mean,
that's from Futurama.
She's pretty hot.
Oh yeah, I like that actor. I feel like she hasn't really been given the opportunity to do something great, But
have you seen her in something else? I haven't.
She was in this movie that was nominated for an Oscar last year called White Tiger.
The name sounds familiar, but I know I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it was nominated for like best screenplay, best adapted screenplay. And she's like the girlfriend in it, and she's really good, and she's just lovely and charming. So I keep waiting for her to be in something like really, really great. Because I think
it's probably coming.
I think she's crazy talented. I think she's going to be big, but she just hasn't really been given that chance yet.
Kind of like that Frida Pinto from Slumdog Millionaire. She was in the first Rise of the Apes.
Yeah, yeah. She was also in a movie I just saw that wasn't very good called Intrusion, I think, on Netflix. But she's really good. There's several actors.
I'm
just waiting for them to break. It's like...
Is that the movie with Chris Hemsworth?
No, it's got not Tom Hardy in it. Well, I can't remember his name. The guy from Upgrade.
Oh, shit. Yeah. He's like Tom Hardy's brother.
Yeah. It's her and him, and they're married, and like they have a break into their house, and it opens this big can of worms. And it was okay, but not much. Not much worth viewing there.
Not Tom Hardy. That's funny. That guy really, he does give Tom Hardy vibes. Wow.
He's got a Tom Hardy-esque nature, yes.
He's Tom Hardy's altered digital self-image. But Tom Hardy just moonlights as a whole other actor.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I think the woman who plays Sati is married to a Jonas brother.
Really?
It looks like she's one of the Jonas wives, along with Cersei Stark.
Wait, who? Cersei Stark.
Right? Oh, no, Cersei. No, not Cersei.
Oh, Sansa Stark.
Sansa, yeah. She's a Jonas wife.
I didn't know either one of them were. That's what I mean, man. I'm becoming more and more divorced from pop culture.
Well, this one's last name actually is Jonas, which I didn't make the
connection. It is in the credits. That's right. I never would have put that together.
I think she's going to be big. I keep waiting for her to have like that role. Makes her stand out and makes people notice her.
I really think they should do a spinoff series of Matrix. Similar to what they wanted to do with the game. Like I want to know more about the concept of these machines, because like Sati was a child, you know, she was birthed by her parents, mm-hmm. and then she has aged. She ages into, you know, an adult avatar, and then I guess they just kind of live forever at that point.
Yeah, I assume that she can choose her own image, and so she has a concept of aging and maturing, so she reflects that.
Especially after spending time with the Oracle, because I think the Oracle was sort of her guardian and Seraph. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. It's like why doesn't she have more investment in the Oracle disappearing? It's like feels like she should be looking for her if there's any hope that she's out there somewhere. But there's no mention of her. I don't know. It's weird.
Because she's really gone. She's strictly out for vengeance now.
Well, she seems to be out for vengeance for her parents, but no mention of the Oracle.
Oh, before, yes, damn it. There's one thing I wanted to cover. The Merovingian.
Oh, yeah.
Slumming it up. I guess he lost it all. I wonder why they brought him back for just that scene. I knew he was in the movie, but
I saw him in the cast list, too. Like,
yes. No damn, more, we should have did his guilty pleasure.
No more he lost it all. Jobs for him.
That's right. No more cheesecake for you. He lost all his decadence. I wonder, is he like, I don't know, does he represent American society nowadays? Now that we've been, you know, he was all crusty and disease ridden and shit.
He's COVID, yeah.
yes, he's our decadent ass 1999 society brought to its knees.
He's a post 9/11 America.
Yes, that's exactly. Yeah, damn it. And he's clinically insane at this point.
Man, we're going to do Stranger Themes along with this today. We're going to autopsy it, Guilty Pleasures, and Stranger
it's
Themes.
The Anomaly, bro.
The Anomalium, yeah.
Yeah, that's your new show right there. episodes that just don't fit into any category. But damn, yeah, sure. I'm glad I thought about it, because if I thought about it after we were done recording, I'd be pissed. But yes, I definitely had to wonder, like, damn, what does he represent in this movie? Because he lost it all, and he managed to avoid purging. He should have just purged. Or just gotten himself purged.
Seems like he would have been better off, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He was one of the oldest programs, even in Reloaded, which is why he had all that power base, and the analyst took care of that. Maybe we should have seen him at the end. Or maybe he stays in hiding because the analyst will wipe his ass out.
Or maybe he should have some ability to, like, take back some power. And so that's what he's working towards, rather than just being this, like, scavenger program.
And those are the kinds of things I would like to see if they continue a story. But I do believe, well, I guess budget wise, it'd be hard to do as a series. But you can do a nice budget series. I mean, Sense8 is fucking global. That show, they spent a ton, like $9 million an episode.
Oh, wow.
And it's on the screen. Like, I gained a new appreciation for it. It is hard to watch sometimes because it's really graphic, mostly sexually. It's like not a ton of the violence is not horrible at all, but it's not the kind of movie you can just watch with the fam. I mean, not the TV series. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel dirty for binge watching it because there's a lot of sex, hetero and bi and homo and everything. There's a
Now I'm gonna watch
a lot
it.
Of nudity.
All the queer sex, I can handle that. That sounds much better. I don't know. My thing with Sense8. We will wrap up. But my thing with Sense8 was they had a trans character.
I remember you told me about this.
And she was such a cliche. It's like you're coming from the Wachowski sisters, who actually are trans and actually live this life, and you're gonna give us the most like boring, two dimensional, cliche trans character ever put to film. And maybe she gets much better. But
she was a Mary Sue.
Yeah, in the first couple episodes, like, ugh, I just don't care about this story. Give me something unique. Give me something interesting. Maybe her mother tries to kill her or something. I don't know. Something better.
Well, maybe. I don't know. Did they just want to write her as normal, maybe? I don't know.
She's just, nothing about that character was interesting to me. But again, I only watched a couple episodes, so maybe
I did some reading on it when I finished it, it turns out including a trans character wasn't even their idea. Ain't that something? It was actually Joe Straczynski's. And he pitched it to the sisters. Well, at the time, Lily was still Andy. And Lana tells Lily, like, see, it wasn't my idea. It was his. That was something I just read the other day. Very interesting.
That makes sense, though. It feels like something they were forced to do, but it also feels like something they would have chosen to do. So I don't know. Ray, is there anything you want to plug or recommend as we wrap up?
Oh, crap. I'm sure I had something. Give me a sec. You got anything?
Yeah. Last night, me and Amanda watched Tick, Tick, Boom.
With Andrew Garfield?
Yeah, the Andrew Garfield musical biopic about Jonathan Larson, who wrote Rent.
Rent, I think, yeah. It's in my queue.
Yeah, it's really good. It's a really fun musical. I thought that, because it's like him on stage telling the story of his life as a one-man show musical thing. And I thought that was all an invention of the movie, but apparently the real Jonathan Larson wrote that show and performed that show, and it's an adaptation of that. But
they
also, you know, film the actual scenes, and it's like a more conventional movie, a more conventional musical around that. But they keep cutting to him on stage telling the story as well. So it's really put together well. The music's fantastic. It's really a fun musical. It's tragic because he famously died like the night before Rent premiered.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah. The night before. Morning of, Amanda said. I thought the movie said night before. But right before it premiered, he died of a brain aneurysm.
Ooh, frick.
But Garfield's great. The music's great. It's directed by Lin-Manuel Miranda. It's really fun. We liked it a lot.
Oh, I didn't know. I knew about the movie, but I didn't know Lin-Manuel Miranda directed it. I still have to watch that and In the Heights. It's back on HBO Max. I missed it the first time when it was in the theatrical window.
Yeah, In the Heights is also, In the Heights is good. I liked In the Heights, but this I would say is better. Hamilton's obviously better. Yeah, In the Heights is cool too.
I'm going to watch them both. Maybe today.
Good double feature, I think. A little Lin-Manuel Miranda double feature.
I do enjoy a musical. We've covered this before. Okay, well, I guess we'll go with Sense8, since I've been talking about it the whole time. What I admire most about it is the production. I've never seen a production like that before, where they filmed in all those different countries, and in many instances, they had to shoot the same scenes from different perspectives in the different countries.
Oh, sure, yeah.
It's really impressive to me as I delved back into season two. I should have rewatched season one. There's so much content. Who has time to rewatch?
I know, it's crazy. Yeah.
It's so much, so I was like, ah, fuck, I'll pick up. I'll watch the recap, and then I'll dive in, and that's what I did, but it's so impressive what they pulled off production wise, different crews, same actors, but doing different angles of each scene, you know, because the characters, you know, all inhabit each other's consciousness.
There's a movie. Did you ever see, I think it's called In Her Eyes.
Mm-mm.
It's about two people who basically experience each other's, I don't know if it's an emotional connection, but they can like see what each other sees, hear what each other hears, feel what each other feels. And that's a really nice little like romance movie. I like that one. Well, Ray, thanks for coming on.
Always a pleasure. I'm glad we made time for this at such short notice. It wasn't in the cards, and then we were like, you know what, we should do Resurrections.
Should talk about it a little bit, yeah. But me and the missus are going to take our dogs for a hike and hang out. So I'm going to let you go. I'm going to let the...
Tell her I said hey.
I will, of course. She retroactively says hey.
Where are you guys at the moment?
We're in Chicago.
Ah, okay.
But I'll let you go. And I want to thank everyone for listening. You are not guilty. Good night, Andrew.
Plus autopsy and...
Yeah.
Plus, yep.
I don't remember how all those other sign-offs. Off yeah.
Yes.
I think just quote-unquote guilty as the sign-off.
Oh, okay.